Play. Welcome to our Play podcast, a podcast developed within the framework of an Erasmus Plus project. This episode is going to be focused on your first steps on how to get involved in the NGO field. And the format that it's going to have is going to be split in two different parts. The first part will be Marie and me. We will share our personal experience in the youth sector. And for the second part, we will have a special guest with us so that we will also be able to talk about his own experience after creating his own youth NGO. Do you want to share a bit of about yourself and introduce yourself to our listeners?
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Sophia. So my name is Maria. I'm an educator and youth worker, part of Youthful EuroGR, the NGO that is representing the project from Greece. And I'm working in various projects of Key Action 2, strategic partnerships, and also creating learning processes in adult education. And I'm very happy to talk about this topic and also with a new entrepreneur later on. What about you, Sophia? Would you like to introduce yourself?
So my name is Sophia, and I'm also part of Youthful EuroGR, as Maria said, the NGO that participated in the Key Action 2 project that we developed. And I also have a bit of experience in the youth field as an informal trainer. And yes, that's the general idea. We have different levels of experience with Maria, and this is going to be an interesting point of view to share, because for my part, I have never submitted my own project, for example, while Maria has. So we wanted to give you two different perspectives, let's say, for the beginning, and then include a third different perspective from the special guest we'll have later on, because he took it a step further from us, and he already created his own NGO. So for the first part, we will have a bit of a chat with Maria around the topic that we already kind of introduced to you. And the goal is for you to get some inspiration and some tips and insights on how to start with your own project idea, what steps you should follow at the beginning. And yes, Maria, are you ready to start?
Yes, of course. I'm excited for this discussion with you, Sophia.
That's nice to hear. So let's say that for my part, I will try to share my point of view. As I told you, I've never submitted my own project. So probably I will reflect the kind of maybe questions and doubts you also have in your head right now. And I will try to ask Maria some questions so that she will share some of her own experience. Mm-hmm. So let's get into it. So for me, coming from a point of view of someone that hasn't submitted, as we said, her own project idea and is still halfway in the world of organizations and Erasmus Plus projects, I will try to express my genuine thoughts and questions so that we will together create a full perspective. So some things to consider and that I would like to share with you is that organizations in general work with people that they know well. And to a certain extent, this is understandable because the person, the people factor in the Erasmus Plus projects field is very important. So I would say that maybe you should give it some time before you start expecting that you will be able to get involved in a project or an NGO and submit your first project idea of your own. Maybe as a first step, you can collaborate with someone else on another project application just to get a grasp on the process and see how they work. Next tip, let's say, would be to listen to people with more experience than you, and preferably from different organizations, in order to have some variety of ideas. And the organizations can be either from your own country or other countries, in order to get, as we said, different perspectives and insights, and see, get a glimpse of what you can expect later. So keep in mind that even though you might be an expert on the topic you want to submit an idea on, a project idea on, there are some technicalities that others might know better, so just be open to that possibility. And finally, let's say, for some general tips we wanted to share, is that we advise you to get informed on the guidelines and the process you need to follow in order to submit your project. And also get some more information, let's say, on non-formal education as a learning method. If possible, also you can get involved in your national agency's activities and events, or just stay in touch with them and ask them meaningful questions, with a stress on meaningful, because of course you want to keep a professional image and you don't want to bother, in quotation marks, people. While they will understand that your questions are not genuine. But having genuine questions and staying in contact with them will be a valuable asset, I would say. Maria, what do you think about our first general topics, our first general tips to our listeners? Do you agree? And now I'd like to ask you at the same time, what is your perspective and your viewpoint on this part?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, all of the tips and the insights from your side are also things that I could easily say. And my experience started very like going from the side of a participant, because if you don't experience something, you don't know how it is. So of course you cannot start just submitting a project without experiencing what is a project. So I started volunteering because I actually went to an Erasmus Plus youth exchange back in 2016. And once I saw this world of Erasmus Plus, I realized that it's something that it means something to me, and I wanted to explore. Of course, just having one project doesn't mean that you know the Erasmus Plus world, but of course it's a very good insight for you to get inspired. So I started back then, and once I returned, it was in Romania specifically, my first Erasmus Plus youth exchange. And once I went back, and surprisingly, it was with this organization that I'm still working, Youthfully Yours GR. So I went back from this experience, and then I contacted the organization, which was and is in Thessaloniki, in order to volunteer with them, because I want to know more. I didn't know about this, and I just wanted to know more about this program. So I just contacted them, and here I am in 2023 with them, still working with various projects. So I think the first step after going on an exchange program is to understand what you like about it, and then just chase it, because you might get inspired from many things on the exchange. The adrenaline when you're there, Sophia, you know, you have experienced it, is very high. And then you go back to your reality, to your like to-do list and everything. And then, you know, this adrenaline drops down quite quickly. So before this happens, what you can do is you just research, and you just go into contacting people that they send you, or like people you know that they have done this. So maybe you will find different like paths on it. It's not necessarily the sending organization. And Yeah, just you go there and ask people, organizations, how you can help, how you can volunteer. Because in the beginning, if you do not volunteer, then you will not understand the idea behind it. So it starts with that. For example, I can give you, it's not only about volunteering, it's also learning by yourself. If you really like the project and how you manage a project, you could also search how, like a course on project management, for example. It's always nice to research yourself and learn by yourself with various courses. Now on internet, we can find everything we need to learn. So yeah, I think it's quite important. And that way, I feel that you will build the trust. And very good, you've mentioned the people perspective and the people equation in this collaboration, because yeah, they are people after all that working with each other. It's not only the project. So I think it's essential to build this trust, and of course the skills and the methods, in order for you, first of all, to feel confident enough to actually submit the project within the framework that that exists of Erasmus Plus. So yeah, that's my point in general for that.
Thank you very much for sharing your perspective and your viewpoint so far and your experience, because it has been a bit more rich, let's say, compared to mine. Mm-hmm. What's interesting and fun is that also my first project was with Youth for Yours, and still there with them. So that's nice. Good to hear. If we move on and we take it a step further, let's say, I don't know if you agree, let me know, but I would say that another important area that our new youth workers need to tackle in order to get ready, let's say, for submitting their own project is research and the power of networking. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that? Do you agree? Mm-hmm. Do you relate to that?
Yes, indeed. As I said, sometimes you cannot always rely on a sending organization or just the person who suggested you to do this project, because of course this works also word by word. So like people share this experience to other people, but you need also to rely on your own research and on your own collaboration and networking with other people. So when you go to an exchange, you might meet at least 20 and maybe more people within a week, and you really build a connection with these people. So you can become friends only, but you can also become partners in future ideas and projects. So it is quite an intense experience. And on top of that, you have also like other ideas, tools, methods that you are learning during this this project, this training course or whatever it is, for your personal and professional development. So you need to think that the experience is not starting and ending in a specific time frame, but it's just like a continuation for you to continue search about the topics, any method that you've heard. So I think researching is the key point, because then networking comes with your own research. And of course, research contains also questions, right? So you need to research in order to see what do you know, what you do not know, and actually feel confident enough to share what is your passions, what is your ideas, and also what are your the things that you don't know or the things that you are not sure about. And then you will find people that they know, and this is how team cooperation happens usually. So yeah, networking for me is a powerful tool. This is how I've met many people to collaborate in projects. This is actually how I've met people that I am now submitting projects with them. And yeah, I think the most important is not to be afraid to share, because sometimes we feel a bit of I don't know, like a bit afraid to share what we know, or we feel a bit of shame maybe in this. So it's good to share your experiences, your learnings, but also to be a bit brave to share your questions. So yeah, I don't know this. Can you tell me more about it? So it's very important in the networking part. What is your experience with networking, Sophia?
I would say I never needed to, let's say, find partners through Erasmus Plus mm-hmm. projects. So I never had this perspective of networking from a professional mm-hmm. point of view in mind. But I think networking happens automatically when you're in a project, because, as you said, you connect with other people quite fast. You spend a lot of mm-hmm. time with mm-hmm. them. So personal interests come up, and you start discussing what you do, what topics you usually work mm-hmm. with, or yeah. So networking on a personal level, it's almost automatic, mm-hmm. I would say. And recently, in my most recent experiences in Erasmus Plus mm-hmm. projects, maybe I also had the professional viewpoint in my head a bit mm-hmm. more. But also not in a stressful, let's say, way that I need to talk to everybody and be close to everybody. I need to share, I don't know, my LinkedIn with everybody. But because also the mood and the atmosphere and the environment in the project is also always welcoming and inspirational, I think this happens. And maybe it starts with a seed during the project. And then when you come back, at least in my case, when I come back, I start reflecting on ideas for my personal project maybe. And then I start connecting the dots and thinking that, okay, the person I met in that project did something similar. Maybe I can contact them and ask something related to that, or they have some other network I can use, or some kind of tool I can use. So yeah, it's definitely valuable on many different mm-hmm. levels, let's say. Mm-hmm. And in order to build on what you already said, which is very, very important and interesting, is that I would say maybe try to diversify if we want to give some kind of advice to our new youth workers who listen to us right now. I would say try to diversify your network by approaching various organizations in terms of the country they're based in and the topics or issues they focus on. Because as you know, in order to submit your project idea, you need to also include the partners, the organizations with which you plan on working. So recently, I have heard also in the past, but more recently, about organizations feeling excluded from partnerships based on the fact that they're not based in an attractive, quote-unquote, touristic destination or in a wealthy Western country. And this is quite problematic, I would say. I don't know if you agree. Mm-hmm. So obviously, you need to consider your area of expertise, and you cannot know and work with everybody. But keep in mind that having some partners you work often with doesn't necessarily mean that you cannot expand and enrich your network. Mm-hmm. And also at the same time, enrich the program itself. So the point is also to create the space for countries to work together. Sometimes having in mind that the right choice of participating countries in a specific topic can make all the difference on different levels. To finish this first part of discussion between the two mm-hmm. of us, I would like to ask you, because you kind of did it, or you've been doing it so mm-hmm. far, can you share with us if it's possible to submit projects independently mm-hmm. without being a part of an NGO? Mm-hmm.
Sure. So submitting a project is not necessarily connecting with having an NGO, so owning and being the CEO of an NGO. but it's more about having the project idea. So of course you can, there is also a possibility through Erasmus Plus to submit your project as an informal group. So you just gather five people or more that you are passionate about the topic and you register yourself. So it's not about the organization, it's more about the idea and of course the development of the project you want to do. So of course, having an organization as a support is always better, especially when the grant is quite high. And then you, of course, managing a big amount of money is not very easy with informal groups. So all these processes of research, networking, volunteering, we have mentioned so far, they will lead to work closely at some point with an organization or even more and collaborate with them. So how do you do this? You do it as an external person, as an external trainer, or as external proposing an idea externally, and then you collaborate with them on the project. So you can just produce the idea, the project idea in your mind, write it down, and then collaborate with the organization to apply through them, and then you just, if when it gets approved, you just implement it. So of course we will not go into practicalities on how you apply and how you submit a project, even though it's very easy process. It's just like a practical aspect of it, and it just needs it's a process of practice, of course, and you will get used to it. But yeah, the idea is that you all the process of what we just discussed, they will lead you at some point to collaborate more closely with an organization.
That's true. You're very right, and you described the process very well. And it is in fact important to stress that you don't have to work in a traditional sense of the term for an organization in order to submit a project, if this is something that that it's keeping you from submitting your project idea. But just collaborating as an external partner, as Maria mentioned, is definitely possible.
Yes. And of course, it works in the way that you have an organization and you want to submit a project as a CEO of the organization, and you can do it. Of course, you can do that. But we need, I think, to understand that, okay, we cannot do everything. I mean, it's a bit, it can become overwhelming, especially when you start with volunteering. And youth work is a very new idea and concept within Europe. So we need to understand that we cannot do everything. So we cannot do all the parts of a project cycle. And even though the motivation and the eagerness we might have, teamwork and collaboration are the key in the field of youth work. So we need to understand whether we are like owners of an NGO or we are just want to submit a project. We need to understand that we want a team behind this project. So submitting a project by an organization means collaboration with other people who are expertise in different fields, and they are joining forces all together in order to create the project vision and make the impact in the world with the project result. So it's actually the team that's going to make everything happen and not just the organization. So yeah, that's for just an extra point for me.
Thank you. That was very valuable to hear, because we don't always have it in mind. And as you said, youth work and Erasmus Plus projects are not the most common profession, quote unquote. So everybody's still getting used to the technicalities and everything, all the information that comes with it. So that was it from us up to now. I would like to thank Maria a lot for sharing her experience. I try to do my best by giving some small hints through my experience so far, but listening from you was super interesting, and thanks again
thank
for
you,
that.
Sophia.
Thank you for staying with us up to now. Maria had a very insightful and interesting conversation with a young entrepreneur, and we'll be glad to hear his own experience as well. So stay tuned even longer, a bit longer, just a bit longer, to listen to this experience, because it's going to be very, very interesting and very helpful. So thank you, and goodbye from me. Stay tuned for the interview.
Don't know where we're going, but I know I saw in your eyes my life growing to unite with you. And the time is going, us to age and toss in years, but we still glowing. Like
so, as Sophia mentioned, we have our guest today, a young entrepreneur who opened an NGO in Brussels and is active on European projects. Welcome, Oban, and thank you so much for being part of this podcast episode and accepting our invitation for this interview. In this episode, as I've explained you also, we are exploring the idea of submitting a project for European funding, especially through Erasmus Plus, and we have discussed with Sophia various thoughts before with our experiences, and we wanted to see this perspective from a young person who actually took the initiative to open their own NGO and understand from their experience the process. Would you like to start by presenting yourself briefly, your background, your studies, and what experiences you have with projects?
Okay, yeah, so my name's Oban Pringle. I'm 24 years old, and yeah, I run my own NGO in Brussels. So I've always been quite interested in education because, yeah, pretty much after I finished high school, I instantly started teaching English because, yeah, I'm a native speaker. I had a lot of opportunities in that field. And then when I came back to Belgium, because I was teaching English in Asia, and then when I came back to Belgium, I found out about Erasmus projects, and I got introduced to the world of more formal education, and I thought, like, oh, wow, this is actually really cool. And then I've seen a lot of different people organize different projects, and I thought, oh, maybe I could do that one day. And, yeah, then after a long while, I started doing it myself.
Cool. Yeah, it sounds challenging, but you did it. And what was your motivation to become an entrepreneur? What does it mean for you to be an entrepreneur and entrepreneurship in general?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I always, like, as a young person, even though I kept going in the direction of wanting to become an entrepreneur, like, I was always trying to avoid it, to be honest. So the thing is that I studied business in high school. And so, yeah, like, we were learning a lot about entrepreneurship and stuff. And it, you know, like, most people that want to become entrepreneurs, they did it because they want to be their own boss. And for me, I actually don't mind having a boss. And I like, I like being told what to do and that kind of stuff. I like being able to work at a place and then after your hours being less emotionally invested in your work, right? But because I've got such specific plans and the way that I work in my own mentality of I like to do things my own way, and the topics that I'm very interested in, they're very specific and very unique that not a lot of people work with, that I always kind of thought, like, maybe this is the right way to go, you know, like, and then I started working for myself, and I actually do really enjoy it because I do really see what I can do, and I'm learning different things, and it's very volatile. I'm never doing the same thing. First, I'm writing project applications, or I'm doing accounting, or I'm finding out how Belgian law works in order to get the NGO paperwork sorted, or I'm implementing the project, I'm learning about how the European funds work, or, like, I'm writing final reports, or I'm doing, like, budgeting, or I'm calling up hotels in different countries in order to make reservations and stuff. So I've always thought of this as, like, oh, wow, this is actually a pretty interesting way of doing things. I don't really like doing the same thing over and over. So while that I didn't really want to go in this direction, I'm quite happy that that my personality works in a way that I was going to end up in this field anyway of being an entrepreneur.
So you said that you're doing many things. Does it mean that you have a small team, or how many people are in the team with you in your NGO?
Well, we've got three on paper, but in reality, we've got a bit more help. So, of course, like because we work on Europe-wide projects, like we work with people in different countries, and like to be honest with you, I do most of the work, but I don't really mind because yeah, the other people they've also got secondary jobs, etc. But then like we complement each other quite a lot with the way that we work. Like one person is a very good translator, another and he's also a journalist, so that's also really useful to like know how to do PR and stuff. And then we've got a friend of mine that is, yeah, he's a native Belgian, so he knows more about Belgian law and that kind of stuff. So, it's quite useful. So I'm like the EU guy. I understand how the project funding works. I understand how the, yeah, just in general, youth exchange training courses, TX2 projects. I understand how they work, how to apply for funding and that kind of stuff. And then we've got like different specialities in our team that we specialize in, I guess.
That's very important, and thank you for sharing this because, yeah, sometimes we feel that we can do everything, but it's good to have a team behind you that it's actually supportive and with a different background, so actually there is a result. Nice.
That is actually one of my flaws, to be honest, that I want to do a lot of work myself, and that's something that I'm working on quite a lot myself. I have had projects in the past where that I didn't really trust the people that I was working with, sometimes for good reason, sometimes it was irrational not trusting them. But yeah, because I've had negative experiences, I've had a bit of a thing of like I would rather do all of the work myself and know it's done properly, but then I know that I can sometimes be overworking myself, unfortunately. But at the end of the day, I know that's something I need to work on, and I am busy working on that.
And how easy or difficult was for you to start actually? Like you said that you have someone from from Belgium who is native and help you with the law there, but was it an easy process to start an NGO in a city of like in the Brussels? How easy was this?
Considering how much responsibility that is laid on you when it comes to organizing your Erasmus Plus projects, I would actually say that it's pretty easy. We started off as an informal youth group, which got changed into an NGO afterwards. The informal youth group, like, it took about 2 weeks to make, I guess. And in this 2 weeks, it was probably only about like 10 hours or so of research and yeah, going to the bank, etc., and writing paperwork and stuff. So, I mean, yeah, it's not nothing. It's not like one, two, three, and you've got it. But in my opinion, it wasn't that difficult. I would say that switching to an NGO was actually much more work because I didn't know anything about the NGO field and like. Something which it was pretty annoying for me that when we started working on the NGO, everything was online, so because of COVID, and then when the COVID died down a little bit, then yeah, then everything was in person again, and so you have to go to the other. Well, I have to go to the other side of Brussels, which is like an hour and a half travel, in order to get my paperwork sorted. So that is a bit of an annoying part. But for the rest, like, it's a lot of research. Like, the paperwork of an NGO is quite complicated because there are very specific procedures in Belgium that you have to follow. Normally, there was very good reason, these procedures. But when you first get into that world, it's a bit overwhelming. You're like, wait, what do I have to do? Like, and then not that many people really help you, especially not for free. So it's a lot of trial and error, but at the end of the day, like everything does get sorted once you know the research and stuff. And it's one of those things, just like with a lot of things in the field of entrepreneurship and Erasmus Plus projects and that kind of stuff, that when you do it at first, it's really complicated and you're going to mess things up. But once that you've done it right once, it's so much easier the second time. Because you're very much left to your own devices in a lot of like the legal stuff. With the Erasmus Plus stuff, the national agency is very helpful, but with the legal stuff, you have to figure it out yourself. So it's like once you, the first time that you're doing it, it's very difficult.
But then you learn, and then second time you're doing it, it's really easy.
It's very motivating, I think, how you presented that. Okay, although it's difficult, there is a way to achieve it. So I would like to know, and maybe the listeners of this podcast would like to understand, okay, let's say I want to start my NGO. The first year is going to be difficult. What do you think is a valuable support you would like or you would need to have to start your new entrepreneurial idea?
Yeah, I would definitely say, like, at the start, don't get overwhelmed by everything. Understand, like, it's a very complicated system, and just see that the whole procedure of learning everything is just a working learning progress, and just always remember it gets better, and that you are, I will say that a lot of people aren't prepared for this, but most of your start as an entrepreneur is studying stuff like studying law, studying procedures, studying how to sort out bank accounts correctly, studying how to pay your taxes, studying how to go to the national bank and sort out your NGO legally, that kind of stuff. So learning those procedures and that kind of stuff. But then once you've done that, like, the fun part really starts of, like, doing, like, all of the projects itself, like writing applications. And, like, once you've jumped through all of the hoops, that's where the creativity starts. And, of course, like, you've got parts of creativity of where when you're creating the NGO, of course, like, you need to have an idea, a spot plan, et cetera, finding people that want to start an NGO with you because alone is too much work. But once that is done, you'll definitely realize that it gets easier. And then you start to realize, like, oh, yeah, awesome. Like, there's this funding opportunity with Erasmus. Oh, there's this funding opportunity from the Belgian government. There's this partnership that I can go with another organization in Belgium. There's this partnership that I can do with this organization in another country. And I also noticed that it's much easier when you have an official NGO to actually speak to people. So that I've actually noticed now, like, for help that I've needed for projects, but, like, I've worked together with some different, like, other NGOs in Brussels, but they're really instantly open to speaking. Like, I don't know if you know, but the Ask for Angela movement, so we want, because we were applying for a project on women's rights, we asked, like, yo, we sent an email to Ask for Angela, and we said, like, yo, can we work together with you? And, like, they replied nearly instantly. They were like, yeah, of course, we can work together with you. While if you're an individual person sending email to, like, a big movement, like Ask for Angela or any other NGO or something like that, then it's way harder to get into connections with them. But people, they definitely put, like, a validated, like, verified stamp on your name if you're also sending emails or writing letters in the name of the NGO.
Yeah, and that tackles a topic that we also discussed before in this episode about networking, how important it is to actually, yes, an NGO, you have your NGO right now, but it doesn't mean that you can do, you're alone in this world. So you're always connected with other organizations, with other entities. So it's very nice to hear this from you. And you said about the creative part. So would you like to share with us what are you working currently? What projects do you have now active?
Well, yeah, I'm taking a bit of a rest at the moment because, yeah, the deadline was last week. So I was working very, very hard on that deadline. But, of course, I've got other projects because I'm a very workaholic kind of person. So for the next project, I'm applying for a Key Action 210 project about women's rights. And I'm also going to apply for a Key Action 220 if me and my partners have enough time to finish the application on time. But we're definitely working quite hard in order to get to get everything sorted for the deadlines. And I think that also an important thing is, like, if you see a deadline coming, just be realistic with yourself. Like, you want, I hear from a lot of NGOs that they have, like, bad relations with national agency and stuff. I can at least say from my relationship with Yint that they're super helpful, and like you can be really honest. Like I organized a youth exchange not too long ago. It ended up being 2 years late because of COVID, and the partners of the project, it was Belgium, Turkey, okay, those two are fine, United Kingdom, Belarus, Ukraine. I mean, what could possibly go wrong, right? So we've been like really honest about everything with the national agency, saying like, yeah, look, like we're not gonna find Ukrainian guys, and like they've been like, yeah, we understand, saying that, yeah, look, we can't work with Belarus because of no fly restrictions and stuff. So, okay, yeah, no worries, you can change the partner. And, like, I've been really honest with them, and, like, they've been really helpful towards me as well. And so I would also just say, like, the national agency is there to help you. At the end of the day, while they are giving you grades and they are giving you criticism on your work, like, all they want to do is give money to good projects, you know? Like, they're really useful. So if you can't get something finished on time, I would definitely say, like, don't hand in something half-heartedly. I would definitely say just, like, leave it for the next deadline. There are 3 deadlines a year. I mean, you've got time to hand things in. So if I would say just, like, be transparent, be open, and at least I can say this about Yint. You can just call them, and they'll help you with a lot of stuff. While I know that with other national agencies, it's much harder to get hold of them, but in general, like, I hear a lot of stories from people, because I've been on more than 60 Erasmus projects, so I've met a lot of organizations and a lot of people, and I've met, like, people with bad relationships with different national agencies, and often I would say that it's just because they're not transparent enough and not being, like, approachable enough, to be honest. And so I think that that's a great way to just know that in reality, just being open with everything, like, yeah, sure, like, there might be something that you did wrong, just be honest about it. Honestly, like, national agency is not the police, you know, like, if you make a mistake or something, like, everyone's going to be cool with that. And also, if you're open about your mistakes, they're going to be more chill with you making them, because you're honest about them.
Yeah, very, very valuable point. And so you focused a lot on the, yeah, being realistic, don't rush on doing everything, and being transparent. Very, very valuable tips and very practical tips and ideas for our listeners. Thank you so much. Like we never knew, we took our decision to have no definition, and our ammunition is to keep our love true. Chose to share a vision more than we envisioned. While this song is playing, I wanna dance with you. For the last point, I would like to hear from you, because we see that you have done a lot of things and you've started with the difficulties, but now you're evolving. How do you see your NGO in 5 years, let's say? How do you want to evolve more in the next years?
Yep, I would definitely want to work on more serious topics, to be honest. I'm really, really interested in, like, cultural anthropology and intercultural dialogue. But yeah, like, in this field, of course, there's a lot of controversial research, because, yeah, like, a lot of cultural anthropologists disagree with each other and stuff on it. Like, finding a different, finding a new middle ground would be a great idea for that. I would also really want to work with, I don't know how realistic this is, but I'm going to try and go in that direction, but see how deep that we can get without putting any danger. I'm actually currently in the Philippines, and so I've been traveling around here, and for the people who don't know, there's a massive human trafficking problem in the Philippines, like people like selling their children and really horrible things, and for like low amounts, like $10,000, people have sold their daughters and stuff like that. And so, yeah, I'm actually quite passionate about the topic of human trafficking because I'm British. And there's also a lot of human trafficking into the United Kingdom, in relation to stuff like prostitution, marijuana farms, especially in the world of crime. So I'm very interested in the topic of human trafficking. But yeah, obviously, like, there's a lot of dangerous people in the world of human trafficking, and this requires a lot of education in order to actually even start working, because you're also going to be working with very vulnerable people and be ready to put yourself in very uncomfortable situations. So I'm planning on doing a lot of research into that topic, and then look at how far that we can get into this topic. But yeah, of course, like we're not going to make any promises or anything, because yeah, like I'm sure, of course, like there are already lots of organizations that do lots of very good work on this topic, and we definitely believe that it's better to leave it to the experts. But if you become one of the experts, you can definitely make change.
Wow, yeah, that's very important and very insightful to hear, and we wish you the best luck to do the research and actually do something for that. And that's very nice, like an NGO that wants to go into this this field. Thank you very much, Oban, for your time. Thank you very much for inspiring us, for your activities and for your future ideas. And I hope that our listeners have gotten an insight from how it is to be an entrepreneur into this NGO field. And yeah, see you in the next episode.